Howdy, folks. Are you constantly getting sick after licking your baseball cap, or taking bites out of your fedora, or rubbing your beanie around on your eye holes? Well, I have great news. Each week here on Germ Hat Podcast, I, along with my co-hosts Pam and Sally, talk to you about removing those shitty spermy germs from your favorite hat. This week we're talking about piss. Did you have a nice laydown recently, and the next thing you know, you wake up and someone or something's pissing all over your face and your beautiful hat?
Oh, that's okay.
We've got you covered. Let me introduce you to Pam and Sally. Pam? Sally? Where are you at? Hey, wait a minute. Who are you guys talking on the mics? At me.
I'm Beth, and I ride the bus, and I like it. But after all that, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
I'm Buggy, and I'm the bedpan you spilled all over your boyfriend's head.
Oh, that's topical after that. Yeah. You guys are vibing.
I'm Cody, and it's NFL preseason, baby. The Seahawks have a game against the Chargers coming up. By the time this podcast is released, that will already be over. I'm wearing my Miami Dolphins shirt. You know why?
No.
Because you like the colors.
That's right, because I like the colors. The Hawks actually play the Dolphins this year. You know that?
Oh,
shit.
What are you going to do? Them.
What shirt are you going to wear?
I don't know. Maybe I'll wear both. I'll just put both on.
Yeah,
top
two shirts.
I don't know. Whoever is winning, I'll put that one on top.
Oh, my God.
You might have to be, like, changing them.
You're going to have to. You might have to leave.
Yeah. Okay. This isn't Germ Hat. I was lying. I am a liar, which you will find out more about later. We've been up to a lot of stuff lately, including wandering around in the woods looking for little baby bears to fight. How'd that go?
Well, I got very scared because there was a black bear, and I came home and my kid said, "It's a black bear. You could just punch it in the face."
That's not what I said.
It was pretty much what you said.
No.
You were like, "Mom, it's more scared of you than you are of it." But I was just like, if I come around a blind corner with this fucking dog.
Okay. I'm sorry. I guess maybe I did say that. I don't know exactly what I said, but that sounds about right. But my point was just, if you make a lot of noise, it's not a problem.
We went to our favorite spot that burned in the Eagle Creek fire, and it's coming back, which is awesome. But also now there's like a picture of a bear, and it said regular visitor.
Which, that's so funny.
And it also said, you should have bear spray. And of course, we had not bear spray and a reactive dog.
I picked up a stick, though.
He had a big stick. He and did. Then I was talking to someone else that was like, that's the best thing you can do. And I'm like, all right, it's great. Well, we had a big stick.
I'm glad that it all worked out. And it's reasonable to be scared because it's a bear.
Yeah. Here's a little bit about black bears that I looked up. Black bears are wild animals that can be dangerous and unpredictable. But black bears are rarely aggressive. Black bears are normally shy and scared of people. And black bear attacks are very rare. In fact, fatal black bear attacks on humans are so rare that they occur on average once per year across North America.
Well, it could have been me.
Could have been.
It could have been.
That's true, yeah.
And yeah, the big message of that was that it's unpredictable regardless.
Yeah.
I also heard that bear spray is 40% effective.
Oh, no, yeah. Bear spray is, like, it helps, though. But, it really does.
I mean, the main thing is I was just worried about coming around a corner on a thin, like, a narrow trail.
And there's the
and
bear.
And the other thing is we were the only people there.
That's true.
Right.
Yeah, and we had sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
And bears,
oh,
like,
oh, no.
The picnic basket.
Yeah, they do, like, a picnic basket. That's
if you have one, it's over. Probably the 60% is just user error. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I would probably have it pointed
you're
backwards.
You're like scared and you drop it. Like,
or backwards.
Not the spray's fault.
Yeah.
But anyways, let's talk about movie stuff because that's really what we're here to talk about. Beth and I went to see David Cronenberg's 1986 remake of The Fly, and I'm happy to report that it still holds up.
It's so good. And also, Buggy, when I said we went to see The Fly, she said, oh, the one with the hot guy?
I think people are going to back me up on that.
I already did.
Yeah, and actually,
I just thought it was
Cody agrees with me.
I think Jeff Goldblum is a treasure, and I do think he's like buff in that movie, but to just say, oh, that hot guy, and you're talking about
really
Jeff Goldblum.
I really don't even think that's that weird. Like, I think it makes sense considering how hot he is in that movie until he becomes a fly. But even like for a little bit after, he's still kind
of
hot.
God, parts of his body.
Well, that's when he stops being hot, obviously. But for like a day or two, he's just like sticky. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and he's jump. He can like flip up.
Yeah, he's and like.
That's a great movie.
Yeah.
Well, it's Gina Davis, isn't it?
Yeah, she's hot.
The practical effects still hold up. It's awesome. Like quintessential Cronenberg body horror for sure. Way more funny than I remember it being. It was like kind of hilarious.
It's, yeah, like a monster movie for modern times. Like it's like modern fears, like monster movies always were, but it's like modern fears, modern monster.
No, it's great.
Yeah, love it's great. Movie. So good.
Great crowd response, too. Oh, it was a pretty good turnout. It was really fun seeing it in a theater. I've never seen that movie in a theater, so that was great.
No, me neither.
I have not.
Beth made me watch this really boring movie called Three Women.
Shut up.
I'm just kidding. It was great. 1977 Altman film. It isn't horror, but I feel like it felt like a horror movie. There's like some very kind of surreal, dreamy stuff. The music is kind of intense and really rad. I just felt like I was nervous and on edge the whole movie, even though there's nothing looming, but it was awesome. I love that.
It's creepy, and so it's a movie I've wanted to see forever. It's one of the few Altman films I haven't seen, and then RIP Shelley Duvall, and I was like, okay, this has been something I've been pushing for a while, and it's streaming on HBO. Or Max, or whatever the fuck you're supposed to say. And it's Shelley Duvall. That's why you felt on edge. She's so good.
Yeah. Then we, all three of us, went to see Peaches Christ and Minx Stole Live at the Clinton Street Theater. You guys want to talk about that? I thought it was rad.
You want to take it?
I mean, it was awesome, obviously. Sorry, my voice. But it wasn't exactly what I expected, but like going into it, I didn't exactly know what they were going to do anyway. But I had a great time. I looked over within the first 5 minutes and you were crying.
Okay, so it was...
Oh my God.
No, I actually... I wasn't
like weeping.
No, I mean, you were crying. But I get it because the song she was singing, like...
Is and that also, when I cried? I think I cried.
Well, you cried because also she's like older. And I don't know. Yeah. It was just like bittersweet to see her like come up on the stage and like sing a song and like she's going to talk about her life.
What
like,
a badass. But I thought I cried. So it was hosted by Carla Rossi and we all like who led the audience in chant of I Hate the Supreme Court, which is the, you know, iconic. Yeah. Which, remember, you want to talk about when we saw Desperate Living?
What about when we saw?
Do you remember when we saw Desperate Living?
When did what?
At the Hollywood Theater.
Well, I remember seeing it, but what about it?
That was, we went to see Desperate Living, and on the way home, a guy in a wheelchair pointed a gun at us.
Oh my God.
And
oh,
I had a, like, evasive
dude,
dress.
This was so funny, because I was cracking up, and you were like, this is not funny.
It was real.
Well, of course, but dude, from my perspective, I was just like cracking up because he had like the obviously scary, but like, what? That's crazy.
He was pointing something at us, and I'm pretty sure it was a gun. This is actually, although it seems like we're way off topic, the movie that we're going to talk about is like a city-ass city movie. And this is an example of a city-ass city night. You go to like an independent theater, you watch an awesome movie, and then the real city like smacks you on the
booty,
butt. On the butt,
on the butt, on the way home.
Yeah, but
anyway,
great. Yeah. And you know, whether or not we agree on why you were crying in it. It was a great thing.
I was super emotional. I am John Waters is one of the things that made me who I am, and made me appreciate all the weird stuff that I appreciate. He's so important to me. He's, you know, like,
he's amazing.
You're allowed to have more than one North Star, and he's one of them to me. So, and Minx Stole is a huge part of that. All the different roles she played. And then Peaches Christ is obviously also awesome. I get emotional sometimes, you guys.
No, no one's making fun of you. It's just like, that was my experience. No, what was actually funny about it is I was talking to Hannah about something and I was saying how like I cry so much all the time, and then I was saying like you do too, and that's why I thought it was funny, because like within the first 5 minutes of that show you were crying. And
it was very moving.
It was awesome.
It's touring the country. So if you're somewhere,
love how emotional you are, because also me too.
Okay. Well, it's called Idol Worship and they're doing a touring version of it.
And it's great.
It's great.
Yeah. That was a fun night. All right. Let's talk about our movie. But first, I want to warn you that we are about to do a content warning.
Oh, yes.
So if you're one of those dudes who goes into a toxic rage every time you hear a content warning, because, hey, fuck those liberal pussies taking away my rights or whatever.
Bob.
Maybe.
Just kidding.
Yeah, maybe mute for 20 to 30 seconds. But in all seriousness, we want to let you all know that we'll be discussing suicide in this episode, which is a key component of tonight's movie. So if that is a topic that is challenging for you, please proceed with caution. And if you are someone who struggles with depression or has experienced suicidal thoughts, please practice self-care, talk to someone, and please know that you are loved and you are not alone. And if you need to speak with someone urgently, call the Suicide and Crisis Hotline by dialing 988. Am I supposed to do that like before the episode even starts? Or does that work?
I think that works.
Yeah.
Because
if I did it before the episode started, then nobody would have heard the Germ Hat stuff.
No, exactly. And they need
to hear it.
They
turned it off.
I guess Germ Hat is more important than people's health and safety.
Well, but you can have both.
Yeah, you can.
And that's the beauty of it
all. You can have it all.
Okay, I have to admit something. I fucked up and I'm a liar.
Oh.
I had this movie picked out on the last episode, and then I got to jabbering at the end. And I forgot to announce it. And I promised that I would announce movies if we had them picked out ahead of time. And I didn't do it. So I apologize for not doing that. I meant to. I got distracted. It'll never happen again unless it does.
It might happen this time.
Yeah, it could. Well, it's not my job to announce it this time.
So. Well, it's going to happen this time.
So tonight we are reviewing the film Retribution from 1987, not to be confused with all of the other movies titled Retribution that are out there. If you look this up on your favorite search engine or movie machine, you'll get like four or five of these, and this one is probably going to be near the bottom. In fact, there's a potential horror gem that is also called Retribution that will probably come up before this.
Oh, next week's movie, Retribution. No, I'm kidding.
That's the next week's movie.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's actually a Japanese film from 2006. I think I've seen it, and I think it's actually good. I don't really remember it. But there's a lot of Retributions out there. This one's from the 1980s. It's from 1987. So just make sure that that's the one you're watching if you're going to watch it. So we're in the late 80s. This is an interesting time for horror because the conventional wisdom, or maybe you could say the uninformed wisdom, is that at this point, the golden era of slasher films is basically over. It's been waning for a few years. We're not quite to the 90s, which is also kind of seen as a low point in horror. Until at least the slasher revival in the mid-90s. But I think there was still a lot of great shit coming out in the late 80s. Here are just some of the other horror films that came out in 1987 alone. The Lost Boys.
Oh, yeah.
Predator.
Shit.
Hellraiser.
Mm-hmm.
Angel Heart. Evil Dead 2. A Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors, which is one of my favorites. Prince of Darkness, Bad Taste, The Stepfather, which is one of my faves. If you haven't seen The Stepfather, check it out. Dario Argento's opera.
Oh, yeah.
So many good movies. But there is also a lot of B-grade slashers and shit like that. But what I think is fun about the late 80s is it seems to be fertile hunting ground for hidden gems. Because there's like a lot of straight-to-video stuff. People are kind of giving up on the genre a bit. A lot of stuff is falling through the cracks. And that's where you get the movies like Retribution. So let's go over some details. This is directed by Guy Magar. I think that's right. I think it's like Major, but with a G. Magar. I don't know. It was written by Guy Magar and Lee Wasserman. And this is actually Guy Maggers' first feature film, and he was essentially an indie filmmaker with no studio support. He'd done some TV work, but this is the first feature film released in a theater that he had ever made. It has an awesome soundtrack by Alan Howarth. That's hard for me for some reason. Alan Howarth. And if you don't know who he is, you're probably not a horror fan. But if you are, you probably know who he is. He's a composer that has been working with John Carpenter like forever on films like Escape from New York, Halloween.
Oh, good old Halloween.
Yeah, the good old Halloween. Big Trouble in Little China and They Live. And he also did sound design for like a ton of the Star Trek movies. Back to the Future 2 and 3, Total Recall. So his music and his sound design are all over the horror landscape and also just mainstream films as well. I thought I'd do a shout out for the guy that did the special effects and gore in this movie. His name's John Egott. He came up with some great gore effects for this movie. He worked on a lot of other kind of offbeat horror films in the 80s. Starring Dennis Lipscomb as George Miller with a really wild haircut.
Mm-hmm. Like a Caesar. Caesar.
Strange haircut. Leslie Wing, you might know from the High School Musical movies if you're a fucking dork.
Yeah. What? She's like a teacher, a mom, or something in them.
Was she like the theater teacher? Because that would be fun.
That might be right. Dr. Jennifer Curtis, look familiar to you?
Oh, God, no. I would not know. I mean, I have to look this up.
That's
now.
Who she is in this
I'm gonna
movie.
Look this up on my own time. Anyway, we'll need to figure it out now, but I'm gonna figure it
Sorry.
Out now.
That's okay. Bye Suzanne bye. Snyder as Angel, the prostitute, who's famous for Weird Science and Killer Clowns from Outer Space. I don't know why, but Killer Clowns from Outer Space just keeps coming up.
It seems always like it's some sort consistent. Of a yeah, it's like a Will Smith 6 degrees of Killer Clowns.
It always comes back to this.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
She's cute.
And then Hoyt Axton makes an appearance and you can't not mention him. I'm a big Hoyt Axton fan.
Human barrel.
Where can you watch this goddamn dirty bastard? It ain't streaming for free anywhere. However, there is a high quality version of this on YouTube at the moment. I can confirm it's the R-rated version. It's on FlixFling. What the fuck is FlixFling? It's on Troma now. I didn't even know Troma had an app.
No. Way.
Yeah.
There's a Troma app. No. I just found that up.
This isn't a Troma film, but I feel like it kind of fits a little bit. Maybe.
Feels, yeah.
Yeah. Not as sloppy or weird, but.
Hey, what the fuck?
What? That's what Troma's films are all about.
They're not all sloppy.
I don't know. You can rent it on Amazon. It's on Midnight Pulp. What the fuck is Midnight Pulp?
I don't know.
There's all these Shudder knockoffs these days, which is cool. I guess there's, you know, more ways to watch movies. I just can't afford to subscribe to all these things. Movie Madness has the Blu-ray Special Edition, which is what we rented, and it has the uncut version on it. Scarecrow has multiple versions of this, including the Blu-ray, the uncut DVD, the regular DVD. So you can find it out there. Let's get into a recap. This is a story about George Miller. George is a struggling artist and a sad man, very sad man. The film opens on Halloween night and begins with some cool shots of people out in the street in their Halloween costumes. There's a lot of cool masks, and these shots are intercut with a camera moving through the neon lit streets of LA, maybe from the perspective of a car, I'm not sure. We have this very John Carpenter-esque soundtrack bumping as we move through the city. Obviously, Alan Howarth did the music, so that makes sense. I do want to note that this is a very city movie, so we're going to talk about some city shit later, as Beth mentioned.
Woo, city.
We find out very quickly that the people in the street have gathered around an old apartment building, gazing up at George, who is very seriously contemplating jumping. And then he does. Down he goes, crashing into a car below and rolling off onto the concrete. And as he's dying, an eerie green portal fills the screen. And when within this portal appears a very sinister burnt face.
But it's green.
And it's green. And so we cut to George in surgery. So he's not dead, but while unconscious, he's inflicted with a vision of a pleading man being shot in the street. The entire vision is tinged in the same green as the portal. So there's that green coloration, and that comes back multiple times. And so this is the setup for Retribution, which can probably most accurately be described as a supernatural possession revenge film taking place in the sleazy streets of 80s Los Angeles.
Yeah, boy.
So at this point, George spends some time convalescing in a medical facility. I think it's a number of weeks. I'm not sure. They don't really tell you how long he's been there. And he makes a connection with his psychiatrist, Dr. Jennifer Curtis, who gives him the good news that he has recovered and is being discharged. So George goes home to his chaotic art studio apartment in the Don Apartments, which is an actual apartment building in the LA area. You can look it up on Google Maps. It's still there. It even has the iconic sign that's on top of the building featured in the film. And so he gets home and he almost immediately begins experiencing some supernatural occurrences and some very nasty dreams wherein he is present for a series of grisly murders. And we'll talk about these death scenes in a bit more detail as we go because they're great. So from here on out, the film follows George as he begins to suspect that he has some connection to the murders that he is dreaming about. And he, along with Dr. Jennifer, some other medical professionals, and of course some detectives who are on the case, and they're trying to figure out what the fuck is going on. One of the detectives is played by none other than Hoyt Axton. I love me some Hoyt Axton. If you don't know who Hoyt Axton is, you might know him as the dad in Gremlins who creates all the crazy contraptions. But he was also a country singer-songwriter in the 60s all the way up through the 80s in the 90s. And we have a couple of his records. Pretty good. Here's a couple seconds of Hoyt for you.
I always hear a voice call. It's all right now. Take it easy. Don't you worry. It's all right now. Here is the place that I most like to be.
So, ultimately, what we come to discover is that when George was dying on the street after his suicide attempt, his body was inhabited by the spirit of a vengeful criminal. And if you didn't read the film's description or summary or anything, you'd be forgiven for not really grasping this from the outset. Because this movie doesn't really explain a lot of stuff, especially in the first half, which is okay. I kind of like that. One of the interesting aspects of this film is that there's a very real human element to it. And that's where we'll get into some of the shitty stuff.
No, city good.
Oh, yeah. That's where we'll get into some of the city stuff.
I mean, it is shitty. The city is shitty, but it's also good.
Yeah. Anyways, so between the interesting aspects of this film, like the gnarly death scenes and the supernatural stuff, we just kind of follow George as he interacts with all the wacky eccentric characters that live in the apartment building with him. And while he's slowly developing a relationship with a prostitute named Angel, who also lives in the building, he continues meeting with Dr. Jennifer, who is concerned about his health and well-being and doesn't necessarily believe that George is involved with any of the murders, despite suspicions from her colleague, Dr. Stash, as we call him, who theorizes that maybe George is the murderer, but he just doesn't know it.
It's also her boyfriend. The colleague is her boyfriend.
Dr. Stash is Dr. Alan. Jennifer's boyfriend.
His name's Alan.
And he may or may not be involved in my bedpan thing.
Bedpan things. Okay, here we go. So what we, the viewers, find out, basically on the same timeline as George, is that he has been possessed by the spirit of Vito Manelli Sr., who is the man we see early in the film being gunned down in the street, and it's up to George to stop this Vito's spirit from forcing George to murder the people that were responsible for Vito's murder. And I'll stop here because I feel like this is one of those movies that you just kind of have to vibe with. The storyline kind of meanders, but like in a good way, and nothing's really spelled out for you. But I did want to talk about a few things specifically, and then we can just kind of get random. First, let's talk about the gore in this film.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Are we going to talk about the, like, how specifically do you want to talk about it?
Well, we'll see. So if you only have access to the R-rated version of this, the gore is cut down a bit. And the uncut version, which is available on the 3-disc Severin Blu-ray release and an old DVD release, it's actually the Dutch version of this. The only uncut version came out in Dutchland.
Oh, that figures.
Yeah, it comes with chocolate sprinkles.
I'm just kidding.
The first scene I want to talk about, George meets a very drunk woman in a very sweet-looking dive bar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's an incredible drunk actress.
Yeah, or maybe potentially actually drunk.
Well, the first time we watched it, I was like, is she actually drunk? What do you think, Buggy? I think she's a good actress.
I don't know. I don't know, like, how hard it is to pretend to be drunk. Maybe she was drunk. I don't know, like, if that's allowed. You know what I mean? Are people just allowed to, like, get
1987, you can get... I mean, I think still, if you can hide it.
Well, yeah.
1987, you can get wasted on a set, I'm pretty
sure. So maybe she was wasted.
In a small
maybe they
budget.
Took it so many times and it's so many takes that she just got, like, progressively more wasted.
Could she be. Was great. The bar was really cool. The song when he walked in was, like, some kind of prototype for how... For No Doubt, and it was terrible. And I'm sorry if anyone likes No Doubt, but it was like that NPX girlfriend or whatever that fucking song. That's what it sounded like to me, except like a little more punk because it was 1987. Anyway,
I'm pretty sure all of our listeners are big No Doubt.
Sorry
fans.
Wow. To the Gwen Stefani heads out there, but no, thank you.
Yeah. So this scene is kind of where we begin to figure out that there's something weird going on with George. He orders a very specific drink. What is the drink? Do you remember?
Oh, it's Retsina, which is like a Greek wine.
Hmm. The twist.
Retsina, yeah.
With
it's
a
like
twist.
A double Retsina with a twist.
Yeah. So the woman notes that someone that she knew used to drink that, and she kind of recognizes them.
She can tell it's like even though it's George, she can see
his
that
eyes.
It's, yeah. And yeah. His smile. Or something about him, which is an interesting thing, this possession. Like, it's like he's still mostly George. It's an interesting level of possession because he is George, but there's obviously like part of this guy in him. But it's not like he's constantly being taken over, which is kind of different.
Just when he like falls asleep. Like I think when like he's interacting with that woman, it's completely Vito.
So you think he's asleep and he's like astral projecting?
I mean, like, I don't know. But from what I can tell, it just seems like...
Because he doesn't remember meeting her once he's... you're right.
I think that...
Well,
he's out running around going to a bar.
Yeah.
But does he remember that he met her?
He remembers, like, meeting her, but, like, I don't know. The way I saw it was just, like, he's, like, watching everything happen and everything play out.
And Vito's, like, at the wheel.
That's what I would think, because why else? Like, yeah. I think when he's awake, he's getting kind of, like, pushed to do things, and then it's still him. But there's,
it's like a weird level
But there's a stark difference between him in the bar versus him in his regular daily life.
There's something, anytime he's going somewhere, too, he doesn't know where he was going, and then he just gets, like,
but
taken
there.
But that's
still different from, like,
I know.
Where he was at the bar, you know what I mean? But that's true. In the daytime, he gets, like, taken places.
He gets,
but he's still,
wherever
like,
he's supposed to go, he goes.
Polite, you know? Yeah. Whereas at the bar, he's more, like, smooth. He's like, you know.
I'll have a double. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. The George like, would not say, I'll have a double Retsina with, or Rets. I don't know how you say it, but.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So they're having this kind of funny conversation where George seems much more confident than his actual character is, or at least the character that we've been introduced to so far. And he's a bit more sinister also.
Yeah.
And he kind of explains that he's not there for any reason. He's just there for a drink. And she is like, nobody comes in here just for a drink.
Trying to hustle me?
I just stopped in for a drink.
Yeah? Nobody just stops in for a drink. I seen a smile of yours somewhere before. You sure we never met?
You remind me of someone too, only you're much more...
So they get a little flirty. They go up to the woman's apartment, and this is where shit goes south real quick. And they do a little bit of yelling at each other because he's kind of doing some detective work, asking her questions about people, and she doesn't like that at all. And then the lights start flickering, and then bam, a window explodes, and the appliances start banging around and flashing. And then evil George enters the room, and you know he's evil because he doesn't have his glasses on, mm-hmm. and his eyes are glowing green.
He glows green. He does
exactly.
glow green.
Evil George.
Mm-hmm. And so we get this epic supernatural apartment trashing like Kurt Cobain and Kurt Loder in a hotel room. And then the drunk woman picks up a knife, but George is basically controlling her with his mental powers. And then gut slice. And this is definitely one of the shots that got trimmed for the R-rated version.
It's her own guts.
Yeah, she cuts her own guts out. So that's gross. That's like, I mean, I feel like once that happens, you're like, all right, we're in it. This is going to be a ride. The second gore scene I want to talk about, and this is the nasty one. George shows up in a meat processing plant where there may or may not be like real meat hanging around. I don't know.
I believe it's real meat. Two thirds of this room are vegetarians, and the other third used to be. I don't know how.
What does that have to do with it?
Because I just don't like to see meat.
Oh,
I like to see it.
I mean, no. I work in a job where I like touch and look.
I love meat all day. I like to get inside of it.
I slice meat. I touch meat all day. Not wieners, meat. But I just don't. I'm not a huge fan of dead animal carcasses.
Right.
Well, speaking of dead animal carcasses.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
George uses his supernatural powers to shove this dude into a pig carcass, and then he tosses him onto a conveyor belt, and then down the belt he goes right into a buzzsaw.
Can I share one thing I wrote in my notes was ham honk slap, because in my family we call ham hocks ham honks, and yeah. There you go, ham honk slap.
Yeah.
Ham honk slap.
Then he also shows up at this auto shop and forces a dude to use a welding torch to chop his own hand off.
Yes.
And then George, like, kind of ghost jumps into this crane-type device and uses that to smash the dude's head against the wall.
That's gross. That is gross. It's like a lift, he's getting trapped between two things, like, crunched.
Totally. And so one of the key things about these scenes, which is kind of critical to everyone figuring out who George really is that every time right before he kills someone, he says the line, "Santa Maria, Mother of God, help me."
Mm-hmm.
And so that tips off his victims that, oh, shit, this is Vito's spirit in here. Or somehow, like, this guy knew Vito or something like that. We don't really know what's going on yet, but
no, the victims seem to know that it's him.
Mm-hmm.
Can I also note that the guy with the slaughterhouse guy looks like, what are they called? Boris Bunsen Bean? Is that Bogus Bunsen Bean?
Boris Bunsen Bean.
Is that right?
Wait. Bogus now Bunsen. I'm getting, it's Bogus.
Bogus Bunsen Bean. He looks like
no,
Bean.
No, now I'm so stressed out and I don't know.
Boinkus Bungus Bone.
No, now anyway, I have to figure this out.
He's one of the evil farmers, the one that smokes the cigarettes.
I have to figure
from
out.
From Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Mm-hmm. So the gore is great in this movie. There's some other just random blood. There's like an Easter Island head that bleeds. It's pretty cool. So the gore effects, great. I think that's one of the key takeaways for me. But I want to talk about city shit. And I know you have some stuff to say about shitty sets.
Why
shitty
can you shit? Not?
I don't know.
Shitty set.
I got shitty in the brain.
Going to the shitty.
So the night that we rented this movie and watched it, we had like a city ass night. Like we were, I don't even remember what the fuck we were doing, but we were on our way home. We're like on a bus. There was a street takeover by a gang of like little bike riders and drift racers. And then we were on. Well, first, and then there were people all, we were all talking about on the street. Like this cute girl walking her dog was like, "Who let the kids out?" Or some funny shit. We're just like talking to strangers riding the bus. Get on the bus. The bus driver's like, "We got a detour because somebody got hit by a car on their bike and he did a face plant and he's in the middle of the street." And we're like, "What the fuck, dude?" Like, but that's like a city ass city. And it's not Some of it's great. You're like talking to straight. It's my favorite thing. You just like having these talking to strangers moments and random connections with people. And this movie is that kind of movie. And it's the cool thing about it is I feel like there aren't a lot of movies that are about city people that aren't rich people in condos on the 37th floor or some bullshit, right?
Totally.
And it's just like regular people, like the apartment building that George lives in. It's like this eccentric woman who runs it with this little dog that wears like a fucking beret and tinted glasses. And it's everyone you run into is like just kind of a struggling artist or, yeah, hooker, whatever. Like it's real city people doing city things back when you used to be able to do that and you didn't have to like.
Yeah. Where like, yeah, it's, I would say it's like the city is still grimy, kind of dangerous, but it also feels like a community, you know?
And it still is. I was saying that about today. Like I, you know, today in this city, it was 92 degrees and poor air quality. And I am dumb. And I was walking around and it was like the people in the grimier parts that were like smiling at me and I was interacting with more than the people in the condo ass parts. And I, you know, I'm not like an advocate of danger, but I do feel like there's something to that. There's just like something, and this movie really kind of captured that. It's like 80s LA. Some people might fear it, but it's there's a lot happening under the grime, like between people, sidewalk life, you know?
For sure. I was trying to come up with some other movies that were set in cities that weren't just like rich people in condos being haunted or whatever. And I got a little list, and I think it's kind of an interesting list. So obviously The Driller Killer, mm-hmm. which with the first time we watched this, I was kind of thinking, oh, yeah, this is like the L.A. Driller Killer. But I don't think that's actually accurate the second time we watched it. But it was an interesting reference point. They Live is kind of a city ass movie.
Mm-hmm.
Candyman, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Don't Breathe is pretty city. I don't know if you haven't seen that yet, right?
I still haven't seen that. No.
Is it the one with the blind guy?
Yeah, the blind guy.
Yeah.
I mean, Escape from New York's like a city ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, Escape from New York for sure. Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, mm-hmm. city as fuck. Mm-hmm. Chud.
Oh, Chud's.
Shout out to Ghostbusters. I think Ghostbusters is a city ass.
Because some of these, I want to say that the city, in this movie, the city is not exactly sinister. It's just grimy and it's the background. It's just like, this is how people fucking live. It's not like making it scary, which even like Candyman is a little bit like it's scary.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. like it's like, oh, the project.
And it's talking about like.
But it, there's a reason.
Yeah, it's like referencing like Cabrini Green and stuff like that.
It's like a. What?
Nothing.
That's right.
Yeah. Is it? Is that what it actually is? Isn't it? Mm-hmm. It is. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. As the only person that's lived urban your entire life.
Me?
Yeah.
What
how do you feel about city shit?
Oh.
Shitty sit.
Shitty shit.
Don't
well,
make fun of me.
This I boy was born in the
city
woods.
The shitty. That's I like to call it that. I mean, I like it. I recently was on a farm when I was in Ohio.
She went to a farm.
And I get it, honestly. Like, I kind of like the small town vibe. And I also think, like, there's something to be said. There's, like, kind of a community feel in both ways. But I agree, like, I don't know. I've liked living in a city. Not that I really know what it's like not to, but I enjoy it. I get to interact with people I would otherwise never interact with.
You talk to strangers every day.
Yeah. And, right? like, I mean, I kind of enjoy that. It's fun. There's definitely been, like, a bunch of shitty stuff that's happened, but at the same time, like, I don't know, I like feel unsettled when I'm like in too a quiet violent. Place and like there's not many people. Like I like don't really like people, but at the same time I do, and I enjoy being around them, and I feel like I meet so many people that like I don't know, change my perspective or just change my day. So
I can identify with that. I don't really like people either, but I do like to be around them.
I like to hear them talking and like have different, as long as I can kind of control the length of the interaction.
No, I mean like just the other day I scared the shit out of this guy when I was on the phone with Hannah and he screamed in my face because like we like passed the corner at the same time and that was scary. But at the same time, like, within that day, I also met, you know, a guy who races pigeons and he was funny. You know, see? He does that stuff. That
this
was
movie
cool.
Mike Tyson? Feels like
it
that.
Was not Mike Tyson, but it was, you know, Jason. Same idea. He also likes racing pigeons. You know, met a lot of people, had a great conversation with my Uber driver. Like, you know, you meet people.
Yeah. I think it was kind of, it's neat. It's I don't know. This might sound like, I'm trying to figure out the right way to say this. It's the same thing as when there's like a gay relationship in a movie, but it's not like, this is about being gay. You know,
or it's like, it's people, like the only thing they are is gay.
Right.
It's just it's the like gay relationship.
This, the backdrop of this movie happened to be the city.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some quirky city stuff, but it wasn't like, and it's bad, and it's this, and you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's just like, they go places that are like very fucking urban. Because yeah. That's just where they were actually filming, because it was Los Angeles in 1987.
Totally.
And they weren't trying to set it, you know, where someone was fucking Fraser Crane. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, there's a lot of cool just city scenes in this. Like, he rides a public bus. It's like on a real public bus. And then, you know, some supernatural shit happens and the bus crashes into a fountain. There's a really great surprise party scene in this movie where everybody at the apartment that George lives at kind of comes out. That's the other thing I want to note really quick is that everyone in this movie is really supportive of George when he comes home from his suicide attempt. It's like
really nice.
Everyone loves him and like is concerned about him. It's really an interesting perspective that I'm not sure I've seen before.
And they're all just his neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's not his family. You know, it's like his neighbors.
Yeah.
Sweet, actually.
Yeah. And like his prostitute girlfriend actually likes him and he likes her. That's and they have this nice kind of interesting relationship where George doesn't even care that she's a prostitute, which I think is very
like
real and kind of cool.
I don't even care both of you guys are prostitutes.
Well, thanks.
You give me shit about it all the time until I give you the mic.
Yeah. Oh, the mic comes on and now you're supportive. Wow. Some people.
Bitch, you better have my money.
Oh, shit. Don't reveal all that.
Pay me what you owe me.
I'm going to have to move again.
Anyway, surprise party. There's a dude riding a motorcycle around in the circle, like in the apartment building.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And so the actor on the motorcycle's name's Chris Caputo. And I read that it was his actual motorcycle that he used for that move, that scene. So that's kind of fun. And then Tony Cox is running around. If you don't know who Tony Cox is, he's the little person from Friday and Bad Santa.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really have anything to do with anything. He just kind of runs into the scene and is running around for a second, which is awesome.
That's when a lot of the, almost all the actors in this movie are like big time, like TV character actors. The guy who plays George, he is like in a million, like every 80s TV show you can think of. When we looked at it, I was like, oh, I can't, like TJ Hooker. I can't remember. It was like every Scarecrow and Mrs. King, things you've never heard of. And I never watched, but I know they were shows. And the same with there's like an old doctor in the hospital. He's like on the fucking X-Files. It's like every person in this show is like a character actor. There's an apartment guy that's like he's like the drunk in the apartment building that's played like the old drunk in every fucking thing you've ever seen. I don't know. I just thought that was kind of cool, too.
Yeah, it's awesome. There's this great taxi scene that's a great reminder of what life was like before Ubers and Lyfts.
Mm-hmm.
For both the driver and the passenger.
Come on. Could you slow down a little? Wait a minute. Go left, right here. Oh, no, wait. I'm sorry. You have to go back the other way. It was a right. You got to go back and make a right. Back the other way, right, please. Right. Oh, wait a minute. Make a left right here. No, right.
Hey, man, where the hell are we going? We've been driving around for an hour.
I don't know yet.
No, because George doesn't know where he's going. And then the driver's like, because you made me drive around, I blew my radiator hose. And I was like, is that how cars work? I didn't know.
Yeah.
That the more you went around in loops, your radiator just blows.
Yeah, so there's also quite a few locations that I think are probably real locations. Like they go to a pretty cool looking diner, or George does, and he's like hungover from his murder. George and Angel go on a date to the Museum of Neon Art, which is a real museum. Yeah. That's pretty sweet. We see George walking through a graveyard, which is another nice, spooky kind of Halloween vibes type of scene. Oh, and then we have to talk about Dr. Rasta real quick.
Oh, Dr. Rasta. Yeah.
what to say about Dr. Rasta.
The vibe of that place was pretty cool, but I was not expecting that whole, like, scene. Well, also, like, it just honestly, like, was so incredibly short. Like, I expected we would have more time with him.
More time with Dr. Rasta.
And then suddenly everything just went to shit so quick.
Yeah.
And it was like, just over. Like, they did such a, like, intense scene of, like, emphasizing, like, his entrance. And he has, like, a snake on his, like, shoulder. And then he just, like, fucking immediately gets, like, defeated. And I just, like, I was sad, kind of, but also confused. It was this whiplash for me.
I guess
the whole thing was whiplash.
I guess that, like, you know, Rasta magic can't defeat, like, a old school Catholic.
I don't know what's going on. I also am like, what did Angel go to him for help for? Like, she was like, this guy helped
Maybe
me out a couple of times. And I'm like,
abortions.
What the fuck, Mom? I was not thinking that at all. I was like, does he do therapy sessions too?
I don't know, but how many abortions?
What the fuck? Why would he do that?
Anyways, city shit. You can watch this movie and just kind of like float by on hanging out in the city, which is cool. Stylistically, as we mentioned, very city, very kind of grimy. The lighting's really interesting in this film. Mm-hmm. There's some cool lighting effects that they use, almost like experimental art or something.
It's very arty.
Yeah, it's kind of arty. Obviously, the gore effects are very well done. Some of the other special effects are very 80s, but in a fun way. But at the same time, at some points in this movie, it kind of feels a little bit 70s. It's kind of weird. Even though it's like we're almost at the 90s, there are parts of this movie that almost feel like throwback 70s until you get to some of the, you know, outlandish 80s outfits and stuff like that.
Which that's, you know, I hate 80s clothes. And yeah. I still, like, no matter, Angel is so cute. I just can't. It's so bad. Like, cute people dressed 80s look gross and stupid.
Yeah.
She's still cute. You know what I mean?
What?
Just, like, 80s outfits. Like, ruin a...
Well, like, big pants? Is that what you mean?
Like, crimped hair and blue eyeshadow.
I love blue eyeshadow. One thing I will not let you tarnish. I understand
just, like,
a lot.
Too many colors together in a way that doesn't like.
I love blue eyeshadow.
I mean, you keep that.
I love it. Okay,
you can have it.
All of it. I mean, I get it. I guess I don't really know. I don't see like that many.
It just
people.
Looks very cheap.
Hmm. Whoa. Okay, well, I like blue eyeshadow.
Maybe I'll try it.
And I like the, like, I like the bling. Like, I just love when, like, people walk in a room and you can hear them. Like, that's one
I
of my
I like Jingle
favorite.
Jangle. No, I like Jingle
I
Jangle,
love
but not,
it.
Like, cheap Jingle.
But I don't care. I just, like, I like the sound. And I like, you always know, like, that person's going to be a lot of fun. You know what I mean?
You're right.
You always
right.
know, like, you're going to, like, have a great time with that person.
You will have a great time with anyone with blue
They're,
eyeshadow.
They're, like, Jingle Jangling.
Well.
You know what
no,
I mean, man?
You're right. You're right. You're right.
It doesn't even have to be blue. Like the blue eyeshadow, I'm just saying. You just know they're a good time.
I don't think I've ever had a bad time with someone with blue eyeshadow.
Right?
Yeah, you're right.
It's a calling card for a great person.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. Obviously, the music's real cool in this. One thing I wanted to note, George kind of has his own theme when he's actual, sort of pathetic, sad George. And it is like a synth version of Changes by Black Sabbath. Kind of funny. Other random notes, Hoyt Axton doesn't have a lot of screen time, but he does make the best of it when he's on screen. Like I mentioned, I love Hoyt Axton, and there's this great conversation that he has with his detective partner about all the weirdos around while they're sitting in the car outside George's apartment. I think that's pretty funny. I want to talk about the kind of astral projection dreams and deaths and stuff, because that's one confusing thing about this, is that it's hard to tell whether George is really doing this physically or if he is going to sleep and then his spirit is kind of appearing in these
and
locations.
That's what I was saying is, why does Vito even need a body if, like, George's body, because we see in the last one of these that George has not left his apartment, but he's out in the world doing this shit. So, like, why does Vito need him? And Buggy had a point about that.
Well, the way I saw it was he just needed something, like someone alive to tether his, like, spirit to. Like,
so it's just Vito's spirit is leaving George's body and going out?
Yeah, and maybe he's, like, his soul. I don't know. I didn't really, like, think about it specifically, like, too hard. I feel like thinking about any movie like this too hard results in many questions.
True.
Yeah, I guess you don't need to, but I just kind of at the end, unless when I it's was like, wait a second, George didn't move. If he really was asleep.
He was tied down, you know. I mean, I thought about that too.
Yeah, because he was tied. Yeah, like they did this whole thing where like Angel and George were tied.
I have so much commentary about like my opinion on like all of these things. Is this like the thought time?
We're not at thought time.
We're getting close.
Oh, yeah. We're not at thought time.
Wait, I want to wait till thought time.
Yeah, thought time.
No thoughts till thought time.
Not allowed.
No thoughts.
Boo, boo.
So, yeah, that's an interesting concept, is the sort of, is he doing this or is he astral projecting? It's kind of like reverse Nightmare on Elm Street, where instead of like somebody falling asleep and getting murdered, he falls asleep and then goes and murders, which is kind of fun. And there's actually a lot of imagery that is reminiscent of Nightmare on Elm Street. There's a lot of imagery in this.
What year did Nightmare on Elm Street come out?
1981.
Oh, okay. So, okay.
Got it. Like I mentioned, Nightmare on Elm Street 3 came out in 1987.
Oh, you did say that. So I should have known, yes, that it was prior.
Yeah. There's like a painting of Vito's ghostly face that is very Freddy Krueger-ish. Mm-hmm. There's a scene that kind of reminds me of Freddy's boiler room at one point. I can't remember which one it is.
Is it in the meat thing? Oh, is it in the mechanic thing?
Might be in the mechanic thing, yeah.
The meat thing or the mechanic thing? I mean, that's like, you know.
Meat or mechanic.
Yeah. City jobs. You got city jobs.
Midnight meat train.
I won't spoil the end, but there is this really great shot that is a perfect example of the Hitchcock zoom right at the end. If you don't know what the Hitchcock zoom is, it's an effect you see in a lot of horror films. And it's created by simultaneously zooming in while the camera dollies backwards, which creates this weird perspective effect that basically distorts the background while it's leaving the characters relatively where they were in the frame. And it was first used in Vertigo, actually. And there's a really great example of it in Jaws that I'm sure you've seen in like all the trailers and whatnot. But I love the Hitchcock zoom, so they use that, they nail that. Here's a funny fact. There's a 2013 documentary called Adjust Your Tracking about people who collect VHS tapes, and this movie is featured in that documentary.
So, interesting.
That is kind of interesting.
Adjust Your Tracking is a real problem for people who collect VHS tapes.
For sure.
Have you, like, on that little VHS thing at Granny's, have you ever had to do that?
What?
Like, mess with the shit because it's, like, lines and you have to, like, make it right?
Do you mean, like, rewinding it or do you mean
something? No, you have to, like, dial it in
because it'll be stripey.
Yeah, it's really strange.
Oh, no. I've never had to deal with that. I've
never
had to
deal
like,
with stripes.
I've just had to deal with, like, putting it in.
And
then it's ready.
That's full.
And then I can just watch the movie.
Yeah, you used to have to like, tracking. Wow.
Tracking. Yeah. You guys want to do some thought-ass thoughts about
thinking? I do.
Number one thought, okay. Go.
Buggy's got thoughts.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, so when you talked about like the whole like, is he astral projecting? What's going on? I kind of got mad because I was like, okay, like, because also I feel like, honestly, what's the main character's name? Is it George?
George. Yeah.
Okay. George, like, has it kind of made right now. Like, he has, like, a community that, like, really supports him. A girlfriend who's, like, great and, like, really nice. And I'm like, the people he's killing aren't, like, great people. Do you know what I mean? And, like, he kind of does have alibis because now we know for sure, like, he's not actually going there. So, like, let's say he freaks out and he tells, like, his therapist and, like...
Dr. Jennifer.
Yeah, she's not even a therapist, you're right. She's a doctor, my bad. Mm-hmm. But, like, he tells her that and the police, like, figure, like, they, like, interview him and, like, interview his girlfriend, right? Like... hypothetically, he really does have an alibi.
He does, and I bet you there's no physical evidence that he was there.
And it says it in the newspaper stuff, too. So I'm like, why can't he just, like, let him kill? But then, like, I thought about it more, and I was like, Vito's still kind of a bad person. Like, he tried to, like, kill the doctor for, like, no reason. And also, like, who's to say he'd even, like, fuck off after he, like, did his whole revenge thing? Even though he was, like, one more. Like, he was very clear, like, he just wants revenge. So I don't know. I was like, maybe George could have been happy.
So you want George to just fill the requirements, then go back to his life?
I was just hoping that could be possible.
Yeah.
Because it made me sad. The same way, like, I was just like, damn. Like, I just feel like George has, like, a really good situation here.
You know what I mean? I think George killed himself at the beginning of the movie and he was revived by Vito.
No, he was. Because, like, he would have been
dead. Here is a detail that we haven't talked about. They were both born on April Fool's Day and died on Halloween.
Yeah.
So I think there was some kind of, like, supernatural bond where I think George died.
I think he died. But I just, like, in my brain, I was just like, why can't things be different?
I know, because I love Angel.
Well, she's a cutie patootie, but I was just also like, this is just, like, sad. Like, this whole community loves this guy a lot. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the way... I don't know. It's just, like, sad. Like, they're all just, like, devastated by him, like, still having problems. You know what I mean? So it just made me sad.
Well, that's, like, what it's like to deal with people who suffer from depression.
But I don't know. But it's not always that way. You know what I mean? It was just kind of, like, bittersweet to see, like, this community really, like, giving a shit about him. It made me sad. I was like, damn. I had, like, another point, but I completely forgot. That really, like, took up all my, like, thinking capacity. That's my big thought.
That was a good thought.
But I kind of, like, worked it out on my own.
Yeah, how are you feeling?
I feel better now. Oh, she's alive, actually. Never mind.
Yeah, she's alive.
I was about to be like, she's dead, but she's not.
Dr. Jennifer lives.
Yeah. Okay, that's it. I'm done.
What do you think?
Anything? I don't have anything that deep. I liked it, and I like city stuff, and I don't like meat. I like riding the bus, and okay. I don't like meat. That's what I have to say about this movie.
Okay. I also, one okay. other note.
She's back.
This has nothing to do with vengeance. The movie yeah. at all, actually. A Nightmare on Elm Street came out in 1984. I was wrong.
Oh, okay.
That just, like, bothered me this whole time also.
Correction.
Yeah, I thought 81 sounded a bit
I was
early.
Like, that was a different movie.
That was Evil Dead.
Okay.
Didn't Friday the 13th, the first one, come out in 81?
Like Kevin 80.
Is that Kevin Bacon's butt?
That is when Kevin Bacon's butt is unleashed upon the world.
One of the greatest days in American history, I'd have to say.
When the world saw Kevin Bacon's ass.
44 years ago.
That's how long ago that was?
Yeah.
That's
if it was 1980, yeah.
Imagine what his butt looks like now.
It probably looks pretty good.
Yeah, he probably had work done on it.
Maybe he has, like, Botox in his butt.
I think he, like, shovels stuff. Anyway.
Butt shovel?
Shovels shit.
Okay, back to the shitty. I don't have a lot to say about this. I enjoyed it. It was a fun ride. I like, as I said, seeing a movie that is set in the city where it's not, like, rich people living in condos being terrorized in a, like, hermetically sealed, super clean space. I thought that was really fun. That's my, yeah.
Yeah. I found it quite interesting. You know, there's classic 80s gore stuff, but I like that it was encompassed in this storyline that felt a lot different than your typical 80s horror film. It's not just like shallow characters, set up, kill. You get to kind of hang out with all these people and you sort of like everyone, mm-hmm. like everyone, even the people that aren't great. They are interesting. Like usually the cops are like the bad guys or the good guys, but the cops are like, they aren't that bad. They're just trying to figure it out. And even like the Dr. Stash, who is kind of like, he's kind of scandalous, like just trying to, I don't know, get George arrested or whatever. But like, I feel like he has maybe some decent motive. So it's like all the characters are pretty cool and they're relatively three-dimensional. So it's really easy to kind of like just get into this and follow the people, even when there's not like hardcore horror action going on.
Even the people that get killed, though, too. Like, yeah. Even like the woman who owns the bar and the meat guy that's Bean.
The meat guy.
Bogus Bunsen Bean.
You
Bean.
Like really like vengeance on meat today.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that. It's just like his business is meat.
Yeah,
he's in the carcass business. Shop or whatever.
He died doing what he loves.
Yeah, ripping pigs, ham hock, flap. No, but like they're both just like, oh shit, we fucked up. We have a whole other life outside this thing we did.
True.
And the mechanic, I guess, too. That was just a little faster. I feel like it speeds up.
Wait, are you saying these people are good? Like they didn't deserve it?
No, I'm just saying they're not just bad.
No, they're not just bad. For
they did
sure.
something terrible.
But, like, look, you saw how much they were grinning. Like, they were excited.
Yeah, they're bad. They're
honestly,
bad.
Vito seemed like a piece of shit, too, though. Yeah, like, Vito, I don't want to be. I want to be for real. Like, you have a point there.
They were all just kind of like, we're in some kind of nefarious business, and we're.
Yeah, they never really got into what the business was.
I think it was a numbers game.
Yeah, they were running a numbers game.
Do you know what that is?
Well, does that have to do with, like, the, like, people screaming
it's
in Wall Street.
No, yeah, okay. It's like the lottery, except it's not sanctioned.
Yeah, it's like there's just numbers and people put money into the numbers and then somebody wins, but it's like...
Okay, but it's like
it's
gambling.
Mafia.
Okay, I'm done. Because I was thinking about like stocks, like no, crazy like stock
I, you know, stuff. I didn't know about what the numbers were until I read the Malcolm X biography. I just was like, oh yeah, the numbers, I've heard about it, but that's what it is. It's like a local lottery. Oh,
okay.
And I didn't know about that till like 10 years ago.
Gotcha.
Oh, there he goes. Popping. He's popping.
Nice work, everybody. So let's do our obscurity rating on this thing. It's 6 out of 10. Not bad. IMDb votes, 1,200. IMDb critics, 25. Rotten Tomatoes, 1.
Ooh, 1.
You know, I'm starting to feel like I want to take Rotten Tomatoes out of this whole thing, but I'll think about it.
Okay.
Availability, obviously I mentioned it's on DVD, it's on Blu-ray, and you can find it on 4 streaming services right now. So let's do the thing we do where we vote. On the count of 3, thumbs up or thumbs down. Is this a gem or a turd or a bucket of pee that got spilled on your hat? 3, 2, 1. Paula, if you're 100% a gem, boy.
Oh,
woo.
Nice. Okay, this is a gem.
Oh, he's going to holler.
And
Albert also agree.
Yeah,
our dog agrees. He's been popping off. He's about to pop off right now. You know, this is a fun late 80s weird one that fell through the cracks. It didn't get enough promotion. That's probably the reason why. I think go check this one out. We're going to take a picture of our dog as he's trying to talk on the mic.
He says, hello.
Do we have a movie for next time?
Not quite.
Okay.
Maybe we could do like an announcement. Like I can figure one out and we can like post it for like the loyal people who want to know.
I have mine, but I'm not next.
You're not next.
We you don't could have go to. Next.
The promise... The promise was that if we have one, we'll announce it.
Oh, okay.
If
oh,
we
right.
don't,
oh,
it'll
I
be
don't
a
have
surprise.
One. If you don't have one, you don't have to.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm deleting these pictures immediately.
Please,
this is
you
so
can...
ugly.
No.
Oh my God.
That's speaking of oh my God.
Evil. Okay.
Oh my God.
Okay. Sorry.
Santa Maria.
Mother
of
God.
Butts.
Help me.
Help.
Is that what you have to say?
Yeah, that's all I have to say.
Okay.
Bye.
That's all,
bye.
Folks.
Dirt dogs on a gym hunt.
Hello. We'll be right back.